Hi, I'm Deb Gordon, and I'm really pleased to have as my guest Michael Gross, renowned New York Times bestselling author, and he's also the editor-in-chief of Avenue Magazine. Michael, welcome.
Great to be here, Deb. Thank you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. I've been a fan of yours for a long, long time. I'll be very, very honest with you. You look surprised, but it's really true. I mean, you have a really rich history here in New York, and you've written many books, and your latest is titled Focus, The Sexy Secret, Sometimes Sordid World of Fashion Photographers. That's really quite a title, isn't it?
Well, it is. And, you know, I've specialized in ridiculously long subtitles ever since I started writing books. I don't know how that happened, but publishers want ridiculously long explanatory subtitles. I always thought one word, you know, like a James Michener novel, Hawaii. And they want Hawaii, a chain of islands in the Pacific Ocean where people dance the hula.
Mm.
Okay.
Yes. Well, I have another S word, salacious. Could have been added.
Ooh. I like that.
Yeah. And so share a brief synopsis of the book with us.
Well, I had written 20 years ago, actually now 22 years ago, God, that makes me feel old, a book called Model, The Ugly Business of Beautiful Women. Right. And for years and years and years afterwards, it was a bestseller and my first, in fact. And for years afterwards, my wife would ask me, why don't you write a sequel? Why don't you write a sequel? Why don't you write a sequel? And I kept telling her there is no sequel. And then a friend of mine told me that he was writing a biography of my favorite fashion photographer and someone whose pictures I actually collect myself, Richard Avedon.
Ah.
And then about 6 months later, he told me he had abandoned the book because of the demands placed on him by the Richard Avedon Foundation, which is the ostensibly charitable organization that exists to maintain Avedon's legacy, and had actually brought him in to write an authorized book. And I was mulling that as I was thinking about what I wanted to do as my next book. I had written a series of books about real estate, luxury real estate, and I wanted to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to my agent about my wife's desire that I write a sequel to Model and how much I would have liked to have written a biography of Avedon, but this guy had tried and he'd been foiled so mm-hmm. badly that he'd abandoned it. And one of us said, well, what about a book about fashion photographers? What if you just took the idea mm-hmm. of Model and turned the camera around? And we both realized that we were on to something, right. And that became my next book.
I love that story. You know, I didn't think about it, but that's exactly what you've done. And so how long ago was that? Like, how long did it take for that process to come to fruition?
Well, I think I finished my last book, which was about 15 Central Park West, the famous condo building,
mm-hmm.
In about 2014. So that would have been when I thought of this. And then I spent a year or two writing it, and it came out in hardcover almost exactly a year ago, and now the paperback will be out on August 29th, or is out on August 29th. And it's very exciting because it has a brand new cover that is absolutely stunning, and it's shocking pink.
I saw it.
And someone said, ooh, that's eye candy, which I immediately loved. So I'm excited about the paperback coming out, and but yeah, these things are years-long processes because it's a lot of work to learn the stories of people who are dead, who don't want to talk to you sometimes, whose families don't want you, as in the case of Avedon, mm-hmm. to write about them. There are a lot of hurdles to get past and a lot of archives to look into and, frankly, a lot of rocks to kick over and see what's underneath.
But the product is always entertaining.
Well, thank you.
Which is awesome. And you've really been entertaining us for quite a long time. I know that the legendary Dominic Dunn called your work social history at its finest.
Well, I was very, very fortunate to come along at a moment when a lot of my idols were still not just alive but working. Mm. And, you know, I've been particularly blessed to have the friendship of people like Nick Dunn and Gay Talese in particular, and it's something that I thank my lucky stars for every day.
Well, talk more about your early career, your background, and how you got your start.
Well, my father was a sports writer for the New York Post. Mm-hmm. He was a columnist named Milton Gross, and I grew up, I used to joke that I grew up in Madison Square Garden, Yankee Stadium, the Polo Grounds, and later Shea Stadium. Mm-hmm. And when I started writing I was meant to be a lawyer, or at least my father had decreed that I would be something other than an ink-stained wretch. But I did start, you know, writing for school newspapers and things when I was a kid. And I started writing about rock and roll when I was in college because rock and roll stars were kind of the equivalent of sports stars in the late 60s, early 70s when I was a kid. And having grown up around sports stars, but more as just the people that you were around every day, somehow I think I transferred that to rock stars. And my father did get to see my very first paid byline before he died, which was a review of the first Doors album after Jim Morrison died. Mm. A great moment in rock journalism, I must add. And I spent 10 years writing about rock and roll. I edited a rock magazine. And around about 1980, I kind of segued. My best friend and I wrote a series of mystery novels where the protagonist, the detective character, was a fashion model. Ah. And that was kind of a case of following the zeitgeist, because at that point, you know, it was big hair rock and stadium rock, and we had both come out of the rock and roll world, and rock wasn't quite as interesting. But what was suddenly interesting was fashion, and you had Studio 54 and, you know, supermodels running wild all around New York and fashion designers coming into their own as kind of very culture-leading stars, mm-hmm. in a sense. And somehow we, you know, clicked with that, and we wrote this series of mystery novels. And he was an English major in college, and I was a history major. So he was put in charge of the writing, and I was put in charge of the research. So I was the final decider on, yes, we can say that factually, and he was the final decider on, yes, we can say that creatively, structure-wise, things like that.
Right.
And we did that for 3 years. But in the process, I started writing about fashion as a means to learn more and to gain access to the inside fashion world. And then I spent 10 years after those books writing about fashion, first for Manhattan Inc., which is a defunct business magazine, then for the local community newspaper. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's this little thing called the New York Times. and at the New York Times, I was catapulted from kind of nowhere to the front rows of fashion shows. And the great thing about that was that not only were you sitting next to other fashion writers, but you were also sitting next to princesses and countesses and the wives of industrialists and the kind of people who actually wear those frocks. Then I moved to New York Magazine, where I both wrote about fashion and I basically started writing about the upper class in New York. And around about the early 2000s, I wrote a book about a luxury apartment building called 740 Park. That also became a New York Times bestseller and gave me kind of a new beat and a new career. And I did that really for 10 years. And then I was looking for something new to do. And the new was old and everything old is new again. And I wrote a book about, interestingly, all through the time that I was at the New York Times, at New York Magazine, writing Model, writing other books, I was collecting fashion photographs. So it was actually a case of, for the first time, writing a book about something that I was personally invested in and passionate about. And that was really what motivated Focus.
I love that. It really, yeah, it came full circle, basically, for you. But, you know, I also love the fact that you really did live that era, you know, Studio 54, a period of so much creativity. Gay Talese, Nick Dunn, as you call him, Warhol.
Well, it's very funny. Just the other night, my wife and I were going through boxes of old photographs, and we found two Polaroids, one of me and one of her, that Andy Warhol took one night in a restaurant. And, of course, we didn't have the presence of mind to get them signed, but we do have these two Warhol portraits that we're now going to get framed. So, yeah, I have been very fortunate. What's that Joel Walsh song, Life's Been Good to Me So Far?
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned your wife. How long have you been married?
I will have to give you her answer because otherwise she will kill me too long.
Okay. I like that. I understand totally. And so, of course, you've had so much praise for your work, but there was also a time of controversy. You spoke of the New York Times and they were involved. You want to share with us a little bit more about that time period?
Which controversy
are
you talking
about? Oh, my goodness.
Was
there more than one? I was talking about the time where they basically tried to suppress one of your books.
Well, you know, that's a big statement. In the midst of the real estate cycle, I decided that I didn't want to be pigeonholed as a writer about real estate and that what I was writing about was the upper class in America and the upper class in New York. And so I thought that rather than write about an apartment house, I would write about an institution that would allow me to write about a different world. And with, I guess, very little foresight, I landed on the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And I immediately encountered a great deal of pushback from the Metropolitan Museum of Art, which did not want me writing a book. The senior vice president in charge of, I don't know, but communications, said to me in our first or second phone call about this, the only kind of books of which we even vaguely approve are those we control. And, you know, I'll give myself the credit of thinking that they knew that they couldn't control me. Mm. So I went ahead and I wrote that book without their cooperation. Again, a startling lack of understanding of what was coming. And what was coming was a rather vicious campaign against the book that included threats of lawsuits, included letters to publications that were considering reviewing or covering the book. And there was a scheduled New York Times review of the book that was vaporized. And the fate of that review remains unknown to this day. The book was briefly, thankfully, banned from the New York Public Library, which was exposed by the New York Observer under previous management. When that happened, it did finally appear in the New York Public Library. And several months later, I spoke to a sold-out crowd at the New York Public Library. So that was a story that ended happily. Mm-hmm. And all in all, you know, it was painful at the time, and I'll chalk it up to being a learning experience. Mm-hmm. That if you take on powerful entrenched interests in New York, not only will they fight back, but they have the power to do that very effectively. And the little bit of credit I'll give to myself is that the book is still out there. It's called Rogues Gallery: The Secret History of the Moguls and the Money That Made the Metropolitan Museum of Art, another subtitle of that's a mouthful.
Yeah.
The book is still out there. It's been optioned by Lionsgate for a television series,
You're kidding.
You know, may or may not happen, but I'm hopeful and I'm still here.
Absolutely. And I'm just curious, was that time period before or after you worked at the Times?
Oh, God, no. I worked at the Times from 1985 to 1988, and Rogues Gallery came out. I finished it the week that Lehman Brothers collapsed, so I guess it came out in 2009. Yeah. So, no, it was very many years afterwards. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and actually, at the very end, the Daily Times, which vaporized that assigned review, never did review that book.
Mm-hmm.
The New York Times Book Review finally did, months after the book came out, but they did, and they gave it a really respectful review. So, you know, you have to say all's well that ends well, mm-hmm. and learn from your mistakes.
Right. And still, it's part of that rich history.
Well, you know, I call that book My Juvenile Delinquent Child. You know, which of your books do you like the best? Well, of course, you like the book that got put in jail. And, you know, to this day, I think it's my best researched, best written,
really?
Most coherent. And with 740 Park, my most important book. I 740 Park seems to have become a part of the canon of social history. Mm. And you know, I'm certainly not going to shy away from that. But Rogues Gallery, because of everything that happened to it, didn't sell quite as well. But, you know, I really do think that it's my best book. It's the one that I am the most fond of.
Oh, well, I definitely would like to read it, that's for sure. And so thankfully, you know, the times have changed and people aren't quite as sensitive nowadays.
And one can always retreat to writing about fashion photographers who do not band together and try and kill you for writing about them. Although, you know, even they have their issues with, yeah. with being written about.
Yes, so. Right. So it's just the way it is and you have to navigate through it and what you've done.
Well, you just, you know, you do your job.
Mm-hmm.
I do my job. And there's a damn the torpedoes full speed ahead. Head aspect to doing what we do, which is communicating information to people. And, you know, we try to be entertaining and informative. And, you know, every once in a while you succeed. And there's an expression in journalism that if somebody isn't screaming, you're not doing your job. So I take comfort in that.
Right. And so, you know, talking about changing times, this is obviously a very unique period in our history. And, you know, also in terms of the creative aspect in fashion, especially with the advent of social media. So talk a little bit about or whether or not that sort of changed how you wrote this book. How different would it have been, say, if you had written this book 10, 15 years ago?
Oh, totally different, because the story would not have had a natural end. You know, the first thing that you have to think about when you start working on a book is what's it about? Where's it starting? Where's it ending? Mm-hmm. And until you figure those two things out, you really can't write a book. And what I decided was I had covered a lot of photographers in Model. And I covered the early photographers particularly, the likes of Edward Steichen and George Heunigen Hühne and Horst, the ones, mm-hmm. you know, the great photographers of the early days. And I decided that I didn't want to repeat that, that what I wanted to do was write a book about modern fashion photography, and that modern fashion photography started after World War II, when there were fast cameras for the first time, when there was, you know, much better reproduction. There were a whole set of circumstances, and the fact of mass media, that fashion after World War II became more of a mass medium, and fashion photography thus was a more communicative medium. And mm-hmm. so, and it was also a really easy place to start because it starts with two giants of fashion photography, Irving Penn and Richard Avedon. Then the question became, where do you end? And in fact, the advent of digital was the end of an era in fashion photography. I kept thinking of that moment when MTV launched back in the 80s, and there was that song by, I think, Thomas Dolby, Video Killed
yes,
the Radio Star.
Absolutely.
Well, digital killed the fashion photographer star, because what it did was it turned photography into a illustration medium rather than a photographic medium. It was no longer capturing a reality. It could be manipulated. Mm-hmm. It made fashion photographers compete with every soul with a cell phone. It tremendously hurt fashion magazines and fashion advertising, which was, of course, the medium through which fashion photography as an art form emerged, because magazines were being slaughtered. And as magazines were slaughtered, the big brands were moving their advertising budgets, the money to online and social media. The digital revolution in terms of selling hurt fashion photography because stores aren't as important anymore. So there was a whole net, and I go on for several pages in the book, towards the end of the book, about this. There was a matrix of, a vast social media conspiracy that inalterably changed fashion photography. And what we do not still know is what's next.
Mm.
You know, we know that the great fashion photographers of this time are either manipulating things digitally in their computers so that it's not really photography, it's illustration, or they're documentarians, like two that I cover a great deal in the book, Corinne Day, the late Corinne Day, who took the great early pictures of Kate Moss, and Terry Richardson, who's a cover boy on all the tabloids and everybody knows about him. They take documentary-style photographs that are very much like the kinds of things that people post on social media and on Instagram. The question of what's next is as yet unanswered, and I persist in my belief that there's someone out there right now with a cell phone in his hand,
mm-hmm.
or her hand,
mm-hmm.
taking a picture that will once again restore fashion photography to primacy and create the next big thing. If it's out there, it hasn't yet been recognized. And I think it will be.
Okay. That's great insight and good philosophy as well. Interesting. Well, it's really great to have you here. Again, you have this history of being involved in so much pop culture, and the book is all about fashion, and you say that you sit front row, you know, at the fashion shows.
Well, I did then.
Oh, you don't
know,
anymore?
I used to be important. I'm not an influencer. I'm not a blogger. I'm the editor of a small society magazine and a writer who does not generally write about fashion per se, but I never did. The thing is that back when I was doing that, from, say, 1985 to 1995, you could actually write about fashion and not care about seams, sleeves, and hemlines. You could write about fashion as a social phenomenon. And now, really, that has been devalued, along with so much else that journalism used to do. And so we go on and we do other things and we find different ways of expressing ourselves. And maybe one day people will realize that something's been lost.
Well, I guess I should nix my next question, which is, who's your favorite designer? You mentioned Avedon as a photographer.
Well, I think my favorite designer right at the moment, both for men and women, is this crazy American who shows in Paris named Rick Owens, whose clothes are mind-bogglingly insane. But my Rick Owens denim and leather jacket is probably my favorite garment. My wife wears Rick Owens all the time. It's avant-garde clothing. It's clothing with thought behind it. It doesn't follow the trends. It's not a barking dog racing after influencers and bloggers. And, you know, a very discreet part of the fashion universe follows and loves people like Rick Owens. And that was the part of the fashion universe that I always related to, whether dressing or writing about fashion. And so he kind of stands out at the moment. But, you know, H&M, APC, there's great clothing everywhere. Uniqlo, the democratization of everything has its good points and its bad points.
And it seems as if the origins are in streetwear.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, I'm sitting here wearing a Uniqlo polo shirt.
Okay. So there you go. You referenced bloggers, and obviously most of them will never have the longevity that you have had in their career. What would you say to an up-and-coming author, an aspiring author, in terms of how to maintain that longevity?
Nowadays. Find something else to do.
Really?
Well, you know, it was never easy. It's a lot harder in a world in which finding a bookstore is near to impossible. You know, nowadays you almost have to go to, if you live in Manhattan, you have to go to Brooklyn to buy a book if you don't want to buy your books online. And the review medium doesn't exist in the way that it did. The influence of the reviewers is much less than it was. The press doesn't cover books to the extent that it used to. The entire foundation on which the book business sat has been, you know, terribly shaken, and it's been terribly diminished. And, you know, I'm fortunate that I was able to get away with it as long as I did, and I don't think that I'm done. But I don't have the insane optimism that I used to have. Now I'm tempered by reality.
Spoken like a true writer. Besides writing books, you are the editor-in-chief of Avenue Magazine. For how long now?
And avenuemagazine.com.
Okay.
It'll be a year on October 15th since I took over. The redesign of the magazine and the redesign of the website happened in March of this year. We've quadrupled our web traffic, and
wow,
the magazine is getting fatter. And so I'm very, very happy to be the editor of Avenue, and you know, to be a holdout against the decline of print. And it's the most interesting thing is that people come to us now all the time. When I knew that we were doing okay was when people started to come to me wanting to be in Avenue. And what's fascinating is the persistence of their desire to be in the print magazine. When I say to them, oh, I can put you on the website next week. Oh, no, I'd rather wait 3 months and be in the print magazine. And that indicates that even in its diminished state, print continues to have an appeal. And my theory has always been that what began as a luxury product, then became a mass market product, is now going to be a luxury product again. Print is going to be a product for the discerning, for people of particular taste, for people who get the difference between things that are instantaneous and disposable and things that you might want to keep around for a while, right. Things that have some lasting value. And, you know, I may be standing on the edge of the ocean railing at the sea, but if that's the case, so be it. You know, and maybe I can keep getting away with this for a while longer.
I love that. And, you know, you're so right about, you know, flipping through that glossy and seeing those images pop. You really don't get that from online. But sadly, a lot of young people won't ever realize that. So
I'm afraid that's the case. But, you know, where there's life, there's hope. And remember, vinyl came back.
You're
so,
right.
You know, buy a book. If I have one message for the people listening, find a bookstore, a real brick and mortar bookstore, and buy a book.
And you know what? I take the subway quite often, and I see a lot more people reading actual books than the Kindles nowadays. So I think you're right. Things are changing.
Where there's books, there's hope.
That's true. And so back to Avenue. I mean, it's a very New York-centric magazine, so it's really right up your alley.
Yes, it takes all of the things that I've done, except perhaps rock and roll, and neatly encapsulates them. So it's a nice place to be at the moment.
And how often does it come out? Is it monthly?
It comes out nine times a year,
but
the website updates daily.
And so again, we're spotlighting your new book, The Behind-the-Scenes Look of Fashion Photography. Where can folks learn more and pick up a copy?
If anyone wants to know more about the book, my website, my personal website is mgross.com, M-G-R-O-S-S, and you can order my books there. You can read about them. You can read the reviews. There's a blog. Ooh, I am a blogger. What do you know?
Well,
I hope people will visit.
I'm Deb Gordon, and I've been speaking with author and editor-in-chief Michael Gross. Michael, again, thanks for coming on the show. And are you on social media?
Yes, Michael Gross, author on Instagram, and M. Gross Gripe Pad on Twitter. Gripe Pad is the name of my blog.
Best of luck with the book. What's the title again?
Focus, the Secret, Sexy, Sometimes Sordid World of Fashion Photographers.